Welcome to another edition of the Cleveland Baseball Talk podcast. I'm Joe Noga from Cleveland.com and joined as always by Paul Hoynes, our Tribe beat writer. So let's get right into obviously the big news surrounding the team right now is Trevor Bauer going on the disabled list. We thought it was an ankle injury, but it's more in the leg.
Right above the ankle where he got hit on the right leg Saturday night in Chicago. It's a stress fracture. Francona called it a small stress fracture, but I don't know the difference between if you have a stress fracture, you don't have a stress fracture. So,
right.
And there's really, no timetable, Joe. At least they haven't mapped one out yet, I guess we should say. So no one really knows if this is a season ending thing or will he be back sometime in September. It's kind of touch and go right now, but I'm sure they'll have more information in the next couple of days here.
Well, anybody who's pitched slow pitch softball and gotten nailed by a line drive up the middle, I can attest to having my leg broken in the exact same way that that Trevor Bauer did probably about 10 years ago, and it feels mushy. Your bone feels like mush. The bruise and it swells up. It's not a real pleasant feeling, but the real worry there is that there's structural, like if he went to push off of that leg, the parts of the bone that aren't bruised or broken would snap. There isn't a lot of integrity, a structural integrity there. On top of that, it's a pain tolerance thing. It's how much pain he can tolerate in being able to come back when the bone is recalcified and everything is nice and sound. So
you got to let the bone heal, right? I mean, there's nothing you can do about that. I mean, that takes time.
Well, let's look at what this does to the Indians rotation. This obviously means that Adam Plutko is going to make a start on Saturday, but Trevor Bauer was having as good a season as any Indians pitcher we could think of recently, just in terms of strikeouts. He'd only given up 7 or 8 home runs this year. Everything was going pretty much perfectly well for Trevor Bauer up until that line drive hit him.
Yeah, I mean, he was having a career year. He's a Cy Young contender. Second in the league in strikeouts, first in innings pitched.
And WAR.
And WAR, yeah. And, I mean, this guy, every start was pretty much the same, The thing that impressed me, Joe, is that he cut down on his walks so much this year and the home runs. He was working, he took a lot of pride in throwing over 100 pitches every start. I think he's the first guy, 25 starts with over 100-plus pitches by an Indians pitcher since at least 1988, maybe. This was his year. And I know he's got to be crushed by it. You just don't know, if he'll come back, and when he does come back, how effective he'll be. That's the big question. And you just, it just keeps. I don't know if you're a Cleveland fan, you're probably thinking what next, or you're sitting there thinking it figures. But this is still really a good rotation. I think they should be able to they're going to win the Central. And you get through September and see what happens.
Well, does that shift any pressure back onto Corey Kluber, Carlos Carrasco at the top of that rotation now to sort of go out there and be perfect every time out for the rest of the way? Kluber appears to have sort of come through that if we can call it a slumping period, low point being in St. Louis where he's out after an inning or a third of an inning or whatever. He seems to have come all the way back and is showing flashes of being, the dominant second half Corey Kluber of last year. Carlos Carrasco has been steady since coming back off of his injury. Does this – can giving Bauer maybe a little bit of a break if he has to take a few turns through the rotation off before he can come back, is that maybe a good thing for the Indians pitchers?
I think I keep thinking, stress fracture in the leg. This guy pushes off his right leg, he pitches with such force, it's not a pretty delivery. It's not a smooth, easy delivery. There's a lot of force there. So I just, know, you worry about that. You just worry the lingering effects of it. But if, you know, let's say it's 4 to 6 weeks and you know he's going to keep his arm in shape, I would think, you know, that, you know, let's say I think he'd have a better chance of coming back than he did when the drone bit his finger, you know, in 2016. He might be in a little better shape than, you know, a little better position than that. But it's still a blow. And, you know, and I think, you know, what you said about, you know, Kluber and Carrasco is interesting, you know, because Kluber, you know, his strikeouts are way down. You know, I don't know if he's, you know, he's won 15 games, but is he the dominant Corey Kluber that we've seen in the last 2 or 3 years? I think he's a different Corey Kluber. To me, he looks like a guy, and he said it's not a conscious effort, but, you know, he's thrown fewer pitches. I think, I don't know if they're trying to, you know, reserve, you know, keep something in reserve for the postseason for him. And he's, you know, he's just, he's working through this knee thing. You know, he had the injection at the All-Star break. It just seems to me that they're kind of holding something back with Kluber and trying to make sure that what happened last postseason doesn't happen again. And Carrasco, to me, I mean, he looks great. He'll have that one weird bad outing, you know, every five times out or something, but he looks dominant to me.
Right. Right. You know, let's move on to the other sort of areas of concern for the Indians. Chief among them, earlier in the week, we learned a little bit more about Leonis Martin and his situation, a bacterial infection that was you know, when Terry Francona starts calling for prayers from folks for Leonis Martin, I guess that should have been the first indication that, you know, things were a lot worse than we first sort of had anticipated. You know, the folks at the Cleveland Clinic pretty much saved Leonis Martin's life, I guess, is the way that Chris Antonetti has been saying.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of, you know, talking to Antonetti, it was a life-threatening injury. I mean, not an injury, an illness, and he's still recovering from it. You know, it was in a bacterial infection that entered his bloodstream, created toxins, and attacked his, you know, internal organs. And, you know, it was touch and go. And, you know, I think Monday when we got to Cincinnati, you know, Antonetti was with the team, came down from Cleveland to join the team. He addressed the ball club about Martin's condition, and then he talked to reporters. And, you know, they've been very hush-hush about it until now. And I think they were waiting for, you know, him to turn the corner, and he finally did. But, you know, Joe, I think baseball is the last thing on Martin's mind and his family's mind and the Indians' mind in regard to him. I think they just want him to get back to good health. And, you know, his future with the club, you know, I think it's more pointed toward 2019 than this year. I'd be really surprised if he's back on the field this year. And you know, why he shouldn't be. He should be concentrating on his health and, you know, just being with his family and trying to get, you know, his life back together.
Right. That brings us to the next sort of injury situation. And Edwin Encarnacion is on the 10-day DL after, you know, experiencing soreness in his left biceps, which was compensating for the sore right hand that was still bothering him after the All-Star break, getting hit by the pitch in the last game. For a guy that was swinging the bat for the most part up until that point with one hand, you know, he wasn't doing too bad, but it obviously got to the point where they had to address the situation, give him some time off, and let him heal up.
Yeah, I think that was a good move. I don't think Encarnacion wanted to go on the DL. I think he felt he could play through it, but you know, you can see, you know, one thing was leading to another. You know, the hand, like you said, he's swinging one handed because his right hand, he's got a bone bruise on the right hand, and then you know he's overcompensating with his left arm, and that starts, you know, he strains the bicep there. So, you know, give him 10 days, shut him down, and hopefully he comes back. You know, I know he's got, you know, that streak that he's very proud of, 30 home runs in the last 6 years, six straight years. And I know he wants to do that. He's at 25 and I think 81 RBIs. So I'm sure that's he's probably counting the days to get back in the, you know, get back on the active roster. And you know, thankfully they had a guy like Yandy Diaz and brought him up, and he stepped right in there. We haven't seen him in the interleague series, but he certainly made his presence felt in Chicago.
Right, and we'll get into Yandy a little bit later on here in the podcast. But just Encarnacion, the way that he always wants to be in the lineup. He's one of those guys that is, you know, even when they go to the National League parks and whatever, he wants to, you know, he prides himself sort of on being in the lineup every day, and that's the approach that he takes.
Yeah, I mean, he was Tito Francona was saying, you know, when they took him out of the game Friday in Chicago after he, you know, his first at bat, he was down in the dugout and he was talking to him and he said, look, I'm sorry. He kept apologizing for getting hurt. I mean, if you're hurt, you're hurt, man. But, you know, that, I think that just shows you that, like you were saying, Joe, he takes a lot of pride in being available every day and hitting the middle of that lineup. He knows what he's getting paid. That's his job. You know, I think he wanted to stay in there. But, you know, this is probably you know, the best move the organization could have made. You know, you look at the standings, you know, you look at the point of the season they're at. This is, and in, you know, 10 days, hopefully he gets everything straightened out and can come back, you know, and pick up right where he left off.
Got a month and a half left in the season, regular season at least, and you've got, you know, 40-some games. Is that enough time to get some of these injured guys back in the mix and back in the rotation? I obviously not Martin. That's a whole different animal. And Bauer, we're still waiting to see what everything involves with, you know, the stress fracture. But, you know, Andrew Miller came back off the DL and he's starting to round into shape and starting to look, you know, more like Andrew Miller. You know, Edwin Encarnacion is going to come back hopefully after just the 10-day stint or whatever, but, you know, maybe he's able to go and like you said, add those five home runs that he needs to get to 30 and, you know, get into a groove where he's hitting his stride in late September, right into October. You know, is 40-some games going to be enough to get this team where it needs to be in order to take on what looks like right now the Houston Astros?
You know, great question. You know, we saw last year where this team, you know, all those guys came off the DL late, you know, Brantley, Chisenhall, and, you know, they were kind of forced into that lineup, and they, you know, that they weren't the same, you know, that wasn't the lineup, that wasn't the team that won 22 straight games when they got into the postseason against the Yankees in the ALDS. Those guys just weren't ready. I mean, and, you know, they just didn't have enough time to get ready. And, you know, obviously Encarnacion twists his ankle and Brantley's got to come in there, you know, and play more than expected. But I don't, you know, I guess the only guy in that position this year, I mean, I think Encarnacion will be fine. I think Chisenhall is probably the only guy in that position right now. He's with the team, you know, he's working out, he's doing some running, but, you know, I just don't know where his status is going to be at the end of September. He's going to be a touch and go guy to me. But I think that, you know, Cabrera has hit well. I think they've got some cover there in right field. So I don't think Chisenhall's absence will be, you know, that big a deal. You know, the thing, you know, Francona was talking about that I found interesting. He goes, you know, in the bullpen, pointing to the bullpen in particular, he said, you know, we might not have the bullpen. We might not have the kind of bullpen we want until, you know, late September when Miller finally gets back in the shape, you know, back where he's, you know, he's Andrew Miller again. And, you know, you finally settle into, you know, decent or, you know, kind of some stable roles with Simber and Allen and Brad Hand. So I think it has the makings of a great bullpen, but it's not a great bullpen right now, but it might be on September 20th.
All right. With that, let's get into some reader questions. I know Paul, you, You solicited a few, got some on Twitter. Why don't you jump in and give us the first one you were talking about?
Okay, this is from Stephen Rose. Is Andrew McCutchen an option off the waiver wire for the Tribe?
Well, you know, this is the time for that August trade magic that Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff have been able to pull off the last couple of years. They've got Coco Crisp in 2016. They got Jay Bruce in 2017. Both of them contributed significantly in playoff runs. Everybody pointing to McCutchen as being the guy. You know, teams try to put their veterans on the waiver wire at some point in August just to see, you know, what the interest is. Do you think it's possible the Indians can work something out and get McCutchen to come over? I think McCutchen would be a stronger candidate than, you know, an Adam Jones, who's already said, you know, he would veto any trade because he's got the no trade clause in his contract.
I think he'd be a perfect fit, Joe. I think you could put him in. I know he's been playing right field for the last couple of years, but I think he could play center field for you. The question is, you know, Antonetti was talking the other day, Monday, that very few players have passed through waivers, and a lot of them haven't gotten the guys that the Indians have been interested in haven't gotten to them. So, you know, that's the process. He wrote a great story the other day on the whole waiver. You know, how the waivers work, and, you know, it's a tough thing. And but I think that's the guy to me. I think that would be a great get for them. I don't think it would cost too much. I think I believe he's a free agent at the end of the year. So we'll see how that works.
And you know, they've got a little bit of time now before it becomes, you know, they have to get it done. You know, they've got maybe a few days here at the end of the week, something like that. I would expect something to happen in next few days, and especially with, you know, the Martin situation. You know, that Martin was the one that was supposed to give them that depth and that flexibility out there in the outfield. Now that he's not going to be an option, I think there's a special urgency to get McCutchen done.
Yeah, I think they're going to get somebody. I don't know who it is, but they will add a bat. They'll add an outfielder before, you know, August 31st.
And like you said, the way that the waiver system works, the Indians are in the best position out of any of the contending teams in the American League. They've got the sixth best record right now, and so, you know, any player would come to them before they'd have to pass through, you know, the Bostons, New Yorks, and Houstons of the league.
All right. Got a next one here from Gene Lesueur from Des Moines, Iowa. I kind of answered this question in a Hey Hoynesie column, but I answered it from my opinion. And as usual, my opinion, the expert shot my opinion down. Mm-hmm. So he asked, you know, with who would be the Indians' emergency catcher? You know, my immediate thought, you know, in case, you know, Roberto, or in case, you know, let's say Gomes has a nagging injury, Perez is your only starting catcher, he gets hurt during the game. So who do you put in there, you know, to catch the last three innings of a ball game? My opinion was you stick the utility infielder in there, you know, Eric Gonzalez. But I asked Francona that. And he had a kind of a different idea. He said he'd go with either Brandon Guyer because of his toughness, or he would go with Yonder Alonso, who did some catching, I guess, in high school. And I asked Gonzalez if he ever caught before. He goes, no, and he made it clear he didn't want to. He goes, if I got back there, I had my eyes closed the whole time.
Well, Yonder at least looks like he's got the catcher's build at least. I mean, he's you know, a little more filled out and I don't want to say stable, but, you know,
he looks like, you know, a big,
broad-shouldered, skinny guy. I can't see him catch that. Although Gonzalez would look more like Sandy Alomar, I guess, back there than anybody else. But
yeah, and then Francona said that he was the emergency catcher for the last couple of teams he played in the big leagues. He said he kept it in. It kept him being willing to volunteer and do that, kept him in the big leagues for a little longer than he thought he should have been. So who knows, man.
Tito can't get back there now. He's more machine than man. So
right.
The replacement hips and knees, I don't think would work for squatting. That's good stuff.
And the next one is from Eric Golden from Westfield. Why did the Indians activate Tyler Olson last night instead of activating Adam Plutko when Bauer went on the DL?
To me, the way things work is you don't make a move like activating Plutko until the day that you need Plutko. You know, they will make that move on Saturday morning when he's going to pitch. They'll activate him that day and make a move, because even in 48 hours between now and then, something might happen where they might have to go in a different direction, and you don't want to and the 10-day rule would apply.
Exactly. So, and whenever Francona gets a chance to add an extra reliever, he's going to add an extra reliever. And you're exactly right, Joe. I mean, you don't have to add Plutko now. He's going to start Saturday. They announced that. So, you know, save him till Saturday. Now, this way, you got eight guys in the pen. You know, you bring an extra lefty. Now he's got four lefties in the bullpen. So this is the greatest thing in the world for Francona.
And Olson, who was, you know, mowing him down in AAA after coming back from his injury, looks like he pitched last night, didn't do too badly. So, give him a chance to get out there and, you know, sort of gauge where he's at.
Okay, and then the last question we got is from Joe McCorkle in Naples, Florida. Do you think the Indians would keep Yandy Diaz on the postseason roster instead of Eric Gonzalez?
The way that Yandy Diaz has been hitting lately in his major league appearances this year, I don't see how you could not keep him, but – you know, we're not the ones that make those calls. Yeah. Obviously, there's a plan that's afoot with Francona and the executives there. But it's sort of been inexplicable, don't you think, Paul, as to why they've sort of been holding Yandy back? This is a guy who every time he gets in a major league lineup has hit the ball this year.
Yeah, I mean, well, I think if the postseason started today, Joe, I think Gonzalez and Yandy are on the roster. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't need a 12-man pitching staff, do you? I don't. No. Maybe you do. I don't know, but I think you could find a spot for Yandy. I really do. Without sacrificing Gonzalez and his versatility, because I think you need that guy. But Yandy, I watched him last spring, and when they were moving him around, you know, he's playing left field, he's playing third base, he's bouncing around, he's hitting like 900 in spring training, but he's playing so many different positions, you know, that I didn't see how that was going to work, you know. And he was the opening day third baseman, he played okay there, but I just wish he had a position, you know, and right now he doesn't. And you know, you've got – who are you going to – are you going to take Yonder out? Are you going to take Encarnacion out? I don't know, you know. I love the bat. You know, you got to like the way the guy swings. He's engaged. He wants to play. But where do you play him?
Well, Francona says he's been working more and more at first base, I guess. And that sort of goes in hand with what – Tito said about how someday soon he will be hitting in the middle of the Indians order. So, that doesn't sound like wishful thinking to me. That sounds like that's a move that's going to happen next year.
Right.
That's immediate. This is a guy who's going to get his shot next year. Right now, I don't see the downside of you've got 40 days left, 40 games left in the season. You've got a month and a half to put Kipnis in the outfield, put Ramirez at second, and put him at third, and your lineup is stronger that way, I think. But, again, you're right. Last year, the constant shuffling back and forth in the minor leagues between the outfield and the infield and I think it was a little bit much in his head when he got up to the big leagues, and it showed. But yeah, we are seeing him hit the ball in the air a little more.
Yeah, turning on the ball a little more. That double pinch hit double on Monday night. I mean, he pulled that to the left to the gap. I mean, this guy just looks like a hitter. He looks like he's going to jump out of his skin almost when he's at the plate. He just looks like he wants to hit. And
he almost put a hole in the scoreboard.
I know. So, I don't know if it's me. You know, I flash back to last year when all of a sudden we've got Gio Urshela playing third base in the postseason. You've got Kipnis in center field, and you've got Ramirez at short. And, you know, I'm wondering, how does that help you? You know, do they do that again? And do you go into the postseason with Yandy and Ramirez at second, and Kipnis who playing who knows where? I hate breaking that groove up. So, but I don't know. I mean, that's just me.
Well, and the other thing is Kipnis is starting to hit the ball a little more. So he's not necessarily that hole in your order that he had been, up until about, the end of June, the beginning of July. Yeah. He's really started to come around a little bit. It was a long grinding process to get him there. And a lot of people still don't believe that he is, but
right.
The numbers are bearing that out, that he's back to sort of being sort of a little more dangerous in your order. You're right. I don't think upsetting the apple cart and reshuffling the defense and just to keep Yandy's bat in the order is the way to go. But still, you've got a guy who's a weapon. Every time he steps into the box, you can't keep holding them back the way they are.
They've got to find a way. But Encarnacion signed for one more year.
Mm-hmm.
Alonso signed for another year. You know, you're paying these guys a lot of money, and do you platoon at first base with Yandy and Alonso? You're paying Alonso what, eight million a year? To platoon?
Right.
I don't know. Do you do that?
Yonder's not killing you against left-handed.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's doing okay. Doing
well. Yeah. So
I mean, it's a dilemma, and I wish the guy could play the outfield, but they don't think he can, and maybe who knows? Maybe they could spend a spring with him out there, but he's a big dude. You know, he's like the Incredible Hulk. I just don't know how much he can move out there, how much he's going to move around on a corner outfield spot.
Well, you think, it's not just as easy as saying, just go out and play in the outfield.
Yeah, exactly.
But then you look at somebody like Jose Ramirez, who you say, just go out and play in the outfield. And Jose Ramirez goes out and plays in the outfield and does it. Let's just talk about it. Like, give me a couple of minutes here on Jose Ramirez. And what he's doing last night, hitting his 36th home run of the season. And it seems like anything Jose Ramirez wants to do, he goes out and does. And that's really hard in baseball, but he's doing it.
Yeah, he's just so much fun to watch. I mean, this guy, every time I see him in the locker room, I look at how can a guy this small do what he's doing? It's like, it's like like that double he hit last night, and he kind of sneaks in behind, the Reds are, kind of focused on Brantley going to third base, and all of a sudden there's Ramirez sliding into second base, and Scooter Garnett's got his back toward him, and they don't know what's going on, and he's standing on second base when you're just sitting there thinking, he should have been on first base. He should have just stayed at first, but he's got great instincts. He sees the whole field so well, and he's got power, man. He's mm-hmm. he's hitting, home runs from both sides of the plate, and he never stops going. They gave him that day off on Sunday, and I was surprised. I thought, usually when a player gets a day off, they say, I don't need it. I can keep going. I didn't want the day off, but he needed the day off. And now he's what, 6-for-10 in the next two games since he took the day off.
Right. Well, and that's fun watching him on that day off. He didn't quit. He was at the top step of the dugout, shouting stuff to his teammates. sort of. not bullying, but like his personality sort of, you know, overwhelms some of his teammates. It definitely, he's standing at the top step of the dugout, shouting and pointing, and, you know, found a way to be involved in the game that way, even though it was his day off. And you talk about his instincts. I love that word, his instincts for baseball, because he doesn't have elite speed. You know, somebody like a Lindor is closer to elite speed. When you're talking about elite, you're talking D. Gordon, you're talking Billy Hamilton, those guys who can fly.
Yeah.
They get their stolen bases and they get their extra, you know, bases and whatnot on pure speed. Jose Ramirez doesn't necessarily match them in sprint speed, in sort of the timing and the metrics and all that. But his instincts, he will see, his vision, seeing who's ahead of him on the bases and where they are and where his opportunities are to sort of be aggressive. I go back to the extra base that he took in a game against, I believe it was Boston at home during it was the start of the streak, and he took he took second base in late in the game, and it really just sort of put the Indians in a position to win that game. And I just thought to myself, you know, he isn't a guy who's, you know, burning up the base paths speed wise, but his instincts and knowing when to go for it was really sort of what made the difference for him.
Yeah, I mean, he's got that play, you know, if he's on second base and, you know, there's a hit, maybe an infield hit to the right side of the infield and there's a bobble, like, you, in a heartbeat, he doesn't stop at third base. Nope. He's sliding across home plate, and he's done that. How many times have we seen him do that? 3-4 times. I mean, you know, you just don't do that. You know, normal players don't do that. You have to have guts and you have to have a feel for the game. That's evident in everything he does on a baseball field. Like you said, Joe, it looks easy to him. It looks easy when he does it. This is a guy, he's second in the American League in WAR. He has a better WAR than Mike Trout. I mean, this guy, you know, he's one behind. He could be the first Indians home run. He could be a 40-40 guy. He's three steals away from being the third 30-30 guy in Indians history, and he could be a 40-40 guy. I mean,
he will definitely get the three steals. He will probably get the 40 home runs.
Yeah, I don't know if he gets the 10 more steals.
10 more steals. I mean, he could. I don't know if Indians fans or if the Indians necessarily even want him to get those last 10 steals.
They don't want him to wear himself out.
Seriously, yeah. No. But think about, he goes head first into the base every time. That's, you know, that's 10 to 12 more times that he's risking some sort of hand, arm, or neck injury doing that. I love the hustle and I love it, and it's exciting and it gets the crowd going and everything like that. But you're right. Between now and the end of the regular season, you know, hey, 40-40 is a great goal, but you know, if getting those last 10 steals means putting extra mileage on your body and you're not ready for the playoffs, then I don't necessarily think that that's something. He was smart enough to not compete in the home run derby, and look where that got him.
Good point. Good point.
You know, maybe pumping the brakes on this. JD Martinez plays in Boston. JD Martinez leads the league in home runs, is probably going to win the MVP just based on that, unless something, you know, really weird happens. But Jose Ramirez has done nothing to detract from, you know, any sort of his performance this year has been, you know, the best in baseball, like you said.
I mean, he's a baseball player. I mean, you stick Martinez out in right field, right?
Right.
I mean, where does Martinez play? Right field. This guy's on the hot corner. He's stealing bases. He's turning double plays. I mean, this is, you know, we haven't seen a season like this, an overall season like this. I think the closest maybe we've seen is maybe a season from Robbie Alomar, but I don't think Robbie ever hit, you know, he never hit 36 home runs. I mean, he never came close to this kind of power, but he's certainly in the category of all around players. That's, you know, maybe, you know, who you measure him against.
Yeah, and we're not even talking about his glove all that much. He never does anything to sort of embarrass himself on the infield. And hey, guess who we're also not – we haven't mentioned
–
we're not even talking about Lindor, who's, you know
– Yeah. Like,
who, who was so hot at the beginning of last week or at the end of last week that, you know, I thought he was going to be named American League Player of the Week. But you're right. This is an unprecedented season as far as you've got two guys at the top of that lineup who are pretty much matching each other, you know, hit for hit and pitch for pitch.
I mean, if God came down and created a leadoff hitter, it would be Francisco Lindor, wouldn't it? Switch hitter, could run, steal bases, hits the ball out of the park, play shortstop, a gold glove shortstop. I mean, what more would you want? I mean, and we're watching two of these guys. Like you said, we get to watch two of these guys every night.
You're presupposing the existence of God, and we don't do that. It's just not what we do here. Well, you know,
Kennesaw Mountain Glanders, if he came down and created a
there you go. All right, Paul, you know, one more game there in Cincy, and then you guys are back home for a quick 3-game homestand in Cleveland. We will talk to you when you get back here.
All right, Joe. Thanks, man.